Because Matt had to wait for the money to arrive, he wound up spending more time in Shady Rest than he had originally intended. He occupied his time by taking rides in the adjacent countryside and visiting with newfound friends in the Texas Star. On this particular afternoon, he was in the Texas Star Saloon playing cards with Emerson Culpepper.
Since you probably saved my life a few days ago, I shall go easy on you.
Culpepper dealt the hands to the table.
No, don't do that. I enjoy playing cards with a professional. There's always room to learn.
All right, Mr. Jansen. I'll do what I can to instruct you.
During the poker game, Mayor Trout conducted a meeting of the city council elsewhere. And even though Annabelle O'Callaghan wasn't a member of the city council, she was present for the meeting as a representative of the Merchants of Shady Rest. Deputy Prescott wasn't a member of the city council either, but he was there as well.
As you can clearly see, it seems to me like you would be the perfect one to elevate the position of town marshal, Prescott. I mean, you are the deputy after all, and you have been the deputy for some time now, and that provides some needed continuity. That means nobody knows the position better than you.
I know the position well enough to know I wouldn't be worth a damn as the marshal.
But you think about it, the pay'll be more than double what you're drawing now.
What do I need money for? I got a free place to sleep right there in the jail. The city pays Mo to furnish my meals free. The only thing I need money for is a few beers and maybe a whiskey now and then. And the money I make deputying pays me enough so I can do that without no problem. If I got more money, I'd just drink more. And next thing you know, I turn too drunk. Now, you sure don't want that. Besides which, mayhaps you ain't noticed, but all the marshals we've been hiring seem to have a habit of getting themselves killed.
We have to do something. Last month, three more families moved away because they said that Shady Rest wasn't a safe place to raise their kids. It seems that every brigand and rapscallion in the entire state has come to town at one time or another just to make mischief.
Well, I got an idea if the council go along with it.
What is the idea?
Suppose we was to ask Matt Jensen to be our town marshal. Why, just hearing the name of who the marshal is would be enough to scare off anyone who was thinking about coming here to raise trouble.
Hey, what do you mean, just hearing the name? What's so particular about the name Matt Jensen?
I can't believe you ain't never heard of Matt Jensen, Clinton. Why, he's about the best person with the gun there is. And he's famous, too, because folks has wrote books about him.
Do you think we could get him to stay around town long enough to be our marshal? From what I've heard of Jensen, he tends to move around a lot.
Oh, he'll stay here for a little while anyway. He's got a reward coming for shooting Mutt Crowley.
Enough to keep him here?
$5,000.
That should keep him here for a while anyway.
Where does that reward come from?
It comes from Wells Fargo. They had one of their employees killed when the Crowley gang robbed a bank in Kansas.
What if the reward were to be delayed for a while? He'd have to wait here for it, wouldn't he?
Well, what make you think that reward will be delayed? I done business with Wells Fargo. They always been on the up and up.
Who has to authorize the payment?
Well, sir, Wells Fargo will release the money, but it'll actually be the county sheriff who'll have to authorize it to be paid.
Well, there you go. All we have to do is convince the sheriff to hold up on the payment for a while.
Now, how are you going to do that? There's no doubt in my mind but that fella that was killed was Mutt Crowley. Now, there was plenty of folks who saw that Jensen is the one who killed him. And I've got the Dodger on Crowley that says there's a $5,000 reward for him. Now, you tell me how the sheriff can be convinced to delay the payment.
We can hold it up while we hold a hearing to determine the circumstances of death.
Are you wanting to know how he died? There was two bullet holes in his heart. Hell, the son of a bitch was propped up down there at Ponder's for half the day. If you wanted to know how he died, all you'd have to do is just go down there and take a look at him. If you wanted to, you could have stuck your fingers in the bullet holes.
There will be no hearing to determine the circumstances of death. As the city prosecutor, I've already submitted a report to the circuit judge that no such hearing is necessary.
Besides, if Mr. Jensen has truly earned the reward, as everyone has stated, it would not be ethical to withhold the payment for any reason.
All right, you folks win. It was just a suggestion, is all. But that leaves us right where we started. At the moment, we are a city without any effective law enforcement. As you can readily see, we are badly in need of someone.
Margaret Margrave had been reading, and she was just about to put out the lantern when someone knocked lightly on the back door of her tiny one-bedroom house. Surprised and even a little frightened that someone would knock on her door this late at night, and the back door at that, she moved hesitantly to it.
Who is it?
Margaret, it's me, Abe Connor.
Is something wrong?
No, I just thought I would like to call on you, if you would be so good as to grant me a few moments of your time.
But I'm already in my nightgown.
Love me, sweet, with all thou art, feeling, thinking, seeing. Love me in the lightest part.
Oh, yes, I answered you last night. No, this morning, sir, I say. Colors seen by candlelight will not look the same by day.
Margaret opened the door.
I came to your back door so no one would see me and think ill of you.
That was so thoughtful of you.
Pritchard had just finished with the newest batch of posters when Sheriff Nelson came into the office the next morning.
Who would do something like that? What kind of inhumane monster could do that?
What are you talking about, Sheriff?
That pretty young woman. You know Miss Margrave?
Margrave? No, I don't think I do know her.
She's the school teacher.
Oh, yes, I have seen her, spoken to her even. I just didn't recall her name.
I should have said she was the school teacher.
Was?
She's dead. Some inhumane Peckerwood murdered her last night. Murdered her in her own bed. Sally White found her body this morning. They were going to do some shopping together, and Miss White went over to her house. When Miss Margrave didn't answer the door, Miss White let herself in. That's when she found her. She was stripped naked, lying in a pool of her own blood. The son of a bitch cut her throat.
Oh, no. That's a shame.
Yes, it is. From all I've heard, Miss Margrave was a sweet young woman. And to think that her friend had to find her like that.
I don't suppose you have any idea as to who may have done such a thing.
No, I don't have any idea in hell.
Well, whoever did it is most likely far from here by now. I can't imagine someone doing something like that, then remaining around town where he could be caught.
You are probably right. No doubt he's running for his life, as he should be. The inhumane son of a bitch. You know, when it is necessary for the county to hang someone, I am generally the one who has to put the rope around the condemned's neck. Since I've been sheriff, I've only had to do it 3 times. And I don't mind admitting that it has bothered me every time. It's an awesome thing to take a man's life, even if that man has been condemned by the court. But I tell you true, Abe, if we ever do catch the Peckerwood who did this, I will take particular pleasure in hanging him.
Maybe we'll get lucky and find him.
Yeah. Oh, how about those reward circulars? Anything interesting in the new batch?
Not particularly. As you can see, I posted the new ones and I destroyed the ones that were no longer valid.
Good, good. Listen, Abe, if you can watch things here for a while, I think I'm going to have a drink. After what I saw in that poor young woman's house, I feel the need of one.
I understand perfectly. Go right ahead. I shall stand watch dutifully.
Pritchard walked back over to the desk and sat down to recall his final moments with Margaret Margrave last night. It had been good. It had been very good. That afternoon in Shady Rest, there was a shooting in the Ace High Saloon, and later on that night, when 2 cowboys got into a fight over a whore at Abby's place, one of them killed the other.
Something has to be done, Mayor Trout. It has reached the point where decent people are afraid to be out on the street at any time now, not just after dark.
I agree. Something has to be done, but what?
You might ask Matt Jensen if he would accept the position.
You know him, Miss O'Callaghan. I'm told that you and he had dinner together at the Merchants Club.
We did? That is true?
Why don't you ask him?
I have no authority to ask him that, Mayor, and you know it. No, sir. If Matt Jensen is asked to serve as our city marshal, the request is going to have to come from someone other than me.
You are probably correct. Very well. I'll call a special meeting of the city council tonight to discuss it. I'd like you to attend as well. We'll hold tonight's meeting at the Merchants Association Club.
All right. I'll be there.
When Matt played poker with Culpepper, he had a pattern of winning a few and losing a few, and he had lost more than he had won, so that, at the moment, he was $20 poorer overall. But the poker had been relaxing and enjoyable, and Culpepper did manage to point out some helpful hints that Matt was sure he would be able to employ in some future games. This afternoon, however, Culpepper's table was full, so Matt managed to find another card game, and in this game, he won more than he lost. As a result, he recovered his $20, plus an additional $10. Several times during the afternoon, Matt could hear gunshots coming from Plantation Row, though, as the other players in the game pointed out, the habitues of that part of town often discharged their pistols for no reason other than entertainment. Matt stepped up to the bar to cash his winnings.
Matt, I wonder if you would let me buy you dinner this evening at the Merchants Association Club.
I don't see why not. The 10% I've given up today would probably pay for the meal, so I'll just feel as if I'm getting my money back. Besides, I ate there the other night with Miss O'Callaghan, and I learned that the chef there is an artist with food.
Well, what you're saying is he puts out good grub? Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Say 7 o'clock?
7 o'clock is fine.
A little later that afternoon, Matt decided, as a matter of curiosity, to check out Plantation Row, since he had not been there since arriving in Shady Rest. The first establishment he visited was the Pig Palace. After he made his usual cautious entry, he saw, sitting in a high chair at the back of the room, a man holding a double-barreled shotgun across his lap. With a leery eye toward the man holding the shotgun, Matt moved up to the bar.
I'll have a beer.
Haven't seen you before. Just arrived in town?
I've been here a few days.
Hope, don't you know who this fella is?
Should I know?
Why, I reckon you should. He's a town hero right now. He's the one that killed Morgan. Only it turns out Morgan wasn't Morgan. This is Matt Jensen.
The bartender put a beer in front of Matt, and Matt put a nickel on the bar.
Don't take the man's money, Poke.
A thin man, dressed in black, with a hawked face and a dark Van Dyke beard, approached the bar and extended his hand.
Mr. Jensen, I'm Jacob Bramley. I own the Pig Palace.
Thank you for the beer.
Matt picked up the mug.
Well, it's the least I can do for a genuine hero. The entire town is thankful to you for killing the man who killed our marshal. But of course, Mr. Durbin here is a little jealous.
Bramley pointed to the man with the shotgun who was sitting on a high chair.
You see, it was only last month that he killed Quince Calhoun, right after Calhoun had killed Marshal Jarvis. There was no such celebration for Mr. Durbin.
Believe me, Mr. Durbin could have had my celebration. It wasn't something I asked for or wanted.
I can understand that, Mr. Jensen. You are a modest man, and modest men don't have any need for all that fol-de-rol. Mr. Durbin, come down here and meet a modest man.
Durbin climbed down from the chair and walked over to the bar. He didn't come up to shake Matt's hand, but just stood at the end of the bar with his right hand near his pistol in a way that, to Matt, appeared to be a little threatening.
I'm told you killed 3 men since you came to town.
You were told wrong.
Wait a minute. Didn't you kill 2 of the men that was going to rob the stagecoach? And didn't you kill that murderer, Mutt Crowley?
I did.
Well, in my mind, Jensen, that makes 3 men.
Your statement was that I had killed 3 men since I came to town. The 2 stagecoach robbers were killed before I came to town.
Yeah. Tell me, Jensen, just how many men have you killed?
Matt lifted the beer mug to his lips, pointedly doing so with his left hand. He took a sip while keeping a wary eye on Durbin. Finally, after taking a drink of the beer, he put the mug down and ran the back of his hand across his mouth to wipe away any of the foam. Again, pointedly, it was his left hand.
Well, how many, Jensen? Or have you killed so many that you can't remember?
I've never killed a man who wasn't trying to kill me. Nor have I ever killed a man who wasn't facing me.
Mr. Durbin, why don't you return to the job I'm paying you for?
Durbin fixed one more angry glare toward Matt. Then he walked back across the saloon to climb up onto his chair.
Mr. Jensen, I wonder if you would join me at my table for a friendly conversation.
Matt nodded. Then, carrying his beer with him, accompanied Bramley back to his table. He was careful to find a chair that not only placed his back toward the wall, but also enabled him to keep Durbin in sight.
Mr. Jensen, I'm told that you are a man who moves around quite a bit.
I can't deny that.
Have you ever thought of settling down in one place?
I give it some thought from time to time.
What I'm getting at is this. Look all up and down First Street. More money is made here on this street than is made in the rest of the town. Hell, the rest of the county. And that includes the money the ranchers are making. And most of the money made on First Street is mine. I know what you were thinking. You are wondering how I can say this when the Pig Palace is just one of the businesses on the street. But I own 100% of the Pig Palace, 51% of the Crooked Branch, 51% of Ace High, and 100% of Abby's Whorehouse. Yes, she is just the front.
Looks like you're doing well.
Oh, I'm doing better than well. I'm doing very well. And here's the thing, Jensen. You could do well, too, if you would like to throw in with me.
Throw in with you in what way?
I know that you have $5,000 coming to you as a reward for killing Crowley. I will sell you 45% of all my holdings for $5,000. The truth is, 45% of my holdings are worth 10 times that much. But I'm willing to do that, because with you as a partner, we would soon control the whole town, then the whole county. What do you say?
Matt finished the beer, then put the empty mug on the table that separated the distance between them.
I say, Hawkins is wrong.
I beg your pardon?
I don't believe you water your drinks. Thanks for the beer.
He left the saloon without any further response to Bramley's offer. When Matt and Hawkins stepped into the dining room of the Merchants Association Club at 7 that evening, they were met by the maitre d'.
Your table is ready, gentlemen.
The maitre d' led them across the otherwise deserted dining room to a long table around which sat 7 men and 1 woman. The lone woman was Annabelle.
What is this?
I hope you don't mind. The truth is, I was less than honest with you when I invited you to dinner tonight. I did so specifically so the city council could meet with you.
There were 2 empty chairs around the long table, and they were right next to Annabelle O'Callaghan. Hawkins maneuvered the seating so that Matt sat next to her.
So, Matt, we dine here again.
So it would seem, Miss O'Callaghan.
Please, Matt, haven't we reached the point to where you can call me Annabelle?
Annabelle?
Mr. Jensen, I'm Mayor Trout. The gentlemen you see around the table here, Gary Dupree, Melton Milner, Bob Dempster, Earl Cook, Martin Peabody, and George Tobin. They are members of the City Council. So is Gerald Hawkins, who you know. And, of course, Miss O'Callaghan, who you also know. Miss O'Callaghan is not a member of the City Council, but she often sits in on our meetings as a liaison between the Council and the Shady Rest Merchants Association.
Each of the men made some sort of acknowledgement as their names were spoken, and Matt nodded back to them.
I'm sure you are wondering why you are here.
I thought I was here to have dinner.
You are indeed.
I apologize, Matt, for not being entirely upfront with you.
But before we go further with the meeting, I would like to read this proclamation.
Trout picked up a sheet of paper.
A proclamation by the mayor of the city of Shady Rest, Texas, declaring appreciation for community service. Whereas, it is important that all citizens know and understand the service, courage, and assistance provided by Matt Jensen in preventing a stagecoach robbery, and thereby protecting the passengers, driver, and shotgun guard from any further violence, and whereas Matt Jensen did encounter the armed and dangerous murderer of Marshall DeVry Pruitt, thereby preventing further harm to any other citizen of Shady Rest, and whereas Matt Jensen provided these vital public services without promise or thought of personal recompense, now, therefore, I, Ollie Trout, mayor of the city of Shady Rest, Texas, with the authorization and support of the City Council of the above-named community, do award the Certificate of Appreciation and call upon all citizens of the city of Shady Rest and upon all patriotic, civic, and educational organizations to observe August 10th in honor of Matt Jensen, who, through his courageous deed, rendered a great service to this community. Given this day by the hand and seal of Ollie Trout and with the authorization of the City Council of Shady Rest, Texas.
Trout gave the certificate to Matt.
Thank you.
Matt was as uncomfortable with all this attention as he had been with the fireworks celebration on the day after he had killed Mutt Crowley. And all things being equal, he would have preferred being over at Moe's Cafe now, having a supper of fried ham and potatoes. During the dinner, the conversation was kept casual until the meal was over. Then Mayor Trout, who was sitting directly across the table from Matt, posed the question that was the real purpose of the meeting.
Matt, We, that is, the members of this city council, and as has also been expressed to me by several of our town citizens, would like to offer you the position of Marshal of Shady Rest. And we are prepared to offer you a salary that is 3 times higher than anything we'd ever paid before.
Mayor, members of the City Council, I appreciate this award, and I am honored by your confidence in me. But I know myself pretty well, and I know that I'm not cut out to be a city marshal.
Why not? I think you would make an excellent marshal.
There are ordinances, state and federal laws to being a city marshal, and those ordinances and laws impose operational restrictions. To be honest with you, there's no way I could operate within those regulations. I'm just not the type of person who would make a good marshal.
I wish you would reconsider the offer.
It's like I said, Mayor. I'm not really the kind of person who would make a good marshal, though as long as I'm here, I will take a direct interest in the well-being of your community. By the way, you might be interested in knowing that this is the second offer I've received today.
The second offer?
Yes. Jacob Bramley offered to make me practically a full partner with him, if I would join him.
Matt, you did turn him down, I hope.
I gave it some thought. But the only answer I could come up with was no.
Tell me, Mr. Jensen, perhaps you could suggest what type of person would be a good marshal.
Sure. Get someone who can't be killed.
The next morning, when Bramley came down from his own suite of rooms, he stood there drinking a cup of coffee, looking around at the nearly empty saloon. The only customers in the place were the few who had spent the night with one of the whores, or the few who couldn't start their day without a drink. Durbin came in then, and he walked around behind the bar and poured himself a cup of coffee. He came over to stand by Bramley.
You ain't the only one Jensen said no to yesterday.
What are you talking about?
Talking about the city asking him to be the new marshal. He turned him down.
Really?
That's what I heard this morning.
You know, Harry, that gives me an idea. You would be perfect.
I would be perfect for what?
You would be perfect for the new marshal.
Now, wait a minute. What makes you think I would want that job? In case you ain't noticed it, boss, all the marshals we've had so far have been getting themselves killed. Why the hell would I want that?
No, you don't understand. If you become the city marshal, we will control the law and the town. You won't get yourself killed because you won't be enforcing the law. You will be facilitating our breaking of the law.
I don't understand what any of that means. Besides, I like the job I'm doing for you now. And I know for a fact you're paying me more than I would make as a city marshal.
Oh, don't get me wrong, Harry. You would still work for me. You would still draw your pay from me, plus what the city would pay you. The only thing is, you would be wearing a badge. And that means that anything you would do, say, on your job here, would be legal. Because you are the law.
Yeah, you're right. That would be a great idea.
Half an hour later, down at the city hall, Durbin walked into Mayor Trout's office.
Yes, Mr. Durbin, what can I do for you?
I'm told you're looking for a new city marshal.
Yes, that's right.
Well, sir, you can quit looking. I'm volunteering for the job.
Really? Do you have any experience as a law enforcement officer?
I ain't got no experience wearing a badge, but you might remember I'm the one that killed the son of a bitch that killed Marshal Jarvis. Besides which, how much experience did Pruitt have?
That's a good question. And the answer is, he had no experience whatsoever. And I fear it was that lack of experience that cost him his life.
Yeah, well, the difference between me and Pruitt is I'm good with a gun. He wasn't.
How good? What I mean is, how does one determine how good one might be?
I've killed 7 men.
I'm not sure what you're saying to me. Am I to understand that you are validating your application to be a marshal by telling me that you have killed 7 men?
They was all men like Quince Calhoun. All 7 of them needed killing.
Perhaps so, but I don't know that the mere fact that you have killed 7 men would qualify you to be marshal.
Now, wait a minute, Mayor. You asked Matt Jensen to be the marshal, didn't you? You asked him, but he turned you down.
That is true.
Well, tell me, Mayor, why did you make the offer to Jensen in the first place? I'll tell you why. You offered him the job because he's killed lots of men. Fact is, he's killed more men than I have.
That isn't exactly the reason the offer was made.
It was part of the reason, if you're honest enough to admit it. You do need a marshal, and you're having a hard time getting one because all the marshals we get here don't live very long. I'm willing to take that chance.
That is noble of you, Mr. Derman, but I don't have the authority to hire you out of hand. I'll have to take it up with the city council, but I will do that, and I'll let you know what the decision is as quickly as I can.
Yeah, you do that.
Mayor Trout was as good as his word. He brought Durbin's proposal before the council.
No, definitely not. Don't you know who Durbin is?
I know that he works for Jacob Bramley.
Yeah, he works for Bramley. He's Bramley's gun for hire.
Gerald is right. I've already buried two of the men he killed, including one that he shot in the back with a 12-gauge.
Well, to be fair to Durbin, you are talking about Quince Calhoun. And Calhoun was not only wanted for murder and robbery, he was the one who, but a moment earlier, had killed Marshal Jarvis.
Yes, exactly. Now this town has heaped honor upon Matt Jensen for doing the same thing, haven't we? How is what Matt Jensen did any different from what Harry Durbin did?
Well, for one thing, Jensen shot Crowley face to face. Durbin shot Calhoun in the back with a shotgun.
I don't see that as a consequential difference. Both men were murderers and both had just killed one of our marshals.
You sound like you're actually in favor of appointing Durbin marshal.
We need a marshal and he is willing to serve, so why not?
Why not? Because we are just asking for trouble if we appoint Durbin or any of Branley's men. Hell, as all of you know, most of our trouble comes from Plantation Row. And if you think we have trouble now, just think of the trouble we would have if these people had the law on their side.
I think Gerald's right.
I have to agree, Mayor. Despite the fact that the killing of Quince Calhoun could be called justifiable, I think it would be a huge mistake to hire Durbin.
All right. I will inform Mr. Durbin that the City Council has turned down his request.
Shortly after Durbin was told that his application to be the new marshal was rejected, Bramley held another meeting of the Plantation Row Citizens Betterment Council.
Gentlemen and lady.
Bramley acknowledged Abby's presence.
Bless your heart, darling, for calling me a lady, which I ain't. But I am a woman, as I'll be glad to show you any time you're of a mind.
Abby, I just may surprise you someday and take you up on that offer. But right now, I've got other things on my mind. It has come to my attention that what we need is to have a lawman on our side. And to that end, I sent Harry Durbin to see Mayor Trout to volunteer to be the new town marshal. Trout, in turn, took it to the city council.
So, do we have a new city marshal?
No, they turned him down.
Well, hell, why'd you call this meeting then?
We don't have a new marshal, but we have something even better. Harry, come on in here.
Durbin stepped into the back room then, prominently displaying a star on his shirt.
What is it with the star? I thought you said the city council turned him down.
Yes, he has been turned down as the city marshal. But you are now looking at the newest deputy sheriff in the country. And as such, he will have authority over whoever is eventually appointed as the city marshal. Folks, we are the law. And the first thing I propose is that we refuse to pay these new taxes the city has placed on us.
The first thing the new deputy did was visit the mayor's office.
You're the deputy sheriff of Pecos County?
Yeah. If you had appointed me city marshal like I asked, I'd be working for you. But I don't work for you now. And I'm here to tell you that nobody on First Street will be paying this new tax.
They have to pay it. It's the city law.
I don't enforce the city law.
Meanwhile, in the town of Pecos, Sheriff Nelson had his own law enforcement problems.
What has it been, Sheriff? A week since the senseless and brutal murder of that young schoolteacher? Are there any leads?
One lead, though I don't know how productive it'll be. I don't know how credible the witness is.
Witness? Do you mean to tell me that there was someone who witnessed the killing?
No, nobody saw the actual killing, but Charlie Keith did see a man go in through her back door.
Charlie Keith? Isn't he the town drunk?
Yes, and that's the problem. I don't know how good Charlie Keith would be as a witness. I mean, even if he is telling the truth, if we had a suspect and brought him to trial on Charlie's word, I'm pretty sure a good lawyer would be able to challenge his... what's the word I'm looking for?
Credibility.
Yes, credibility. And that's too bad, too, because Charlie told me he was in the back alley when he saw someone knock on her door. Then he saw the door open, and he saw the man go inside.
What is your level of confidence in that report?
I believe him. I've known Charlie Keith for a long time, even before he became a drunk. He has his faults, but he's never been a blowhard. He's never been a man to spread tall tales. If he said he saw the man, then I believe he saw him.
Did he get a good look at the man? I mean, if he saw him again, do you think he could recognize him?
No. I asked Charlie if he could identify the man if he saw him again, and he said that he didn't think he could. It was too dark. You know what I'm thinking?
What?
I'm thinking that Miss Margrave may have had a man friend, and she didn't want anyone to know anything about it. There was a clause in her teaching contract that said she couldn't be married. There was also a morals clause, meaning she couldn't even be seen with any men. I think all we have to do is find out who she was seeing, and we'll have our man.
You are probably right. But you say that Keith can't give you a description?
No. Like you said, he was back in the alley, and you know there are no street lamps back there.
I have an idea.
What's that?
The killer doesn't know that he was seen. And the killer doesn't know that he can't be identified. Suppose we put the word out that we have a witness, someone who saw and can identify the killer.
What good would that do?
If nothing else, it would get the killer nervous. Maybe so nervous that he might try something that would inadvertently cause him to fall right into our laps.
Yeah, that's a great idea. We could... No, wait. If we did that, it could make Charlie Keith a target, and I wouldn't want to do that.
No, we don't have to say who the witness is. All we have to do is say that we have a witness.
All right, we'll do that. I'll start spreading the word.
Pritchard watched Sheriff Nelson leave, then he went over and poured himself a cup of coffee. When Matt came down from his hotel room the next morning, he was surprised to see Annabelle waiting for him in the lobby.
Miss O'Callaghan.
No, it's Annabelle, remember?
Annabelle? What are you doing here?
I came to ask a favor of you.
Sure, anything. Except I hope you aren't going to ask me to serve as city marshal.
No, it isn't that. Besides, we have a deputy sheriff now.
So I've heard. What's the favor?
I want you to teach me to shoot a gun. I think that in a town like Shady Rest, it is almost imperative that someone be able to shoot well enough to defend themselves. And I believe that would go for a woman, as well as a man.
I can't argue with that. When do you want your first lesson?
This afternoon, right after you take me to lunch. As I recall, you did offer to buy lunch for me, didn't you? That was several days ago, but I assume the offer is still valid.
It is absolutely valid. That is, if Mose is all right.
Mose would be fine. I'll meet you there at noon.
At the opposite end of Pecos from the sheriff's office, in one of the stalls of the livery, Sheriff Nelson and Charlie Keith were engaged in conversation. Nelson had not come to the conversation empty-handed, having brought a pint of whiskey as a bribe to get Keith to talk to him.
Damn, this really is a blended whiskey, and not the kind of blending I have to do.
He pulled the cork and held the bottle opening under his nose.
Oh, it smells like a little bit of heaven. Oh, yes, I thank you, Sheriff. With all my heart, I thank you.
I thought you might appreciate that, Charlie.
Keith took another swallow, then he wiped his lips with the back of his hand and looked directly at the sheriff.
Oh, now, what is it that you want?
I want to talk to you about the man you saw going into Margaret Margrave's house on the night she was killed.
Oh, the poet, you mean?
The poet? What do you mean, the poet?
The feller that went into the teacher's house. He stood there on the back porch and spoke a poem to her.
Do you remember the poem?
Oh, sort of. It was something like, "Love me with everything you are." Them might not be the exact words, but they were something like that.
How do you know it was a poem?
Well, it wasn't like it is when someone is just talking to another person. He sort of said the words like he was on stage or something. Also, a couple of the words rhymed. But right now, I can't rightly tell you which words it was that was rhyming.
Charlie, do you remember any more about what this person looked like?
No, it was too dark.
Damn, I was hoping you might recognize him.
Ugh. Oh, I would recognize him, all right.
You just said you wouldn't.
I said I wouldn't be able to recognize him by seeing him. But you didn't ask if I'd recognize him if I heard him talk, especially if he was to talk as if he was reciting a poem or something.
Charlie, I thank you for this information. But for now, let's just keep this between you and me, all right?
All right, Sheriff, if you say so.
After having lunch at Moe's Cafe, Matt rented a buckboard and team, and he and Annabelle drove about 2 miles out of town where he started his instruction. She had her own pistol, a .32 caliber, and she took it out to show Matt.
I bought this a few months ago. I hope it's all right.
If you shoot it accurately, trust me, it's all right. Let me see how you hold it.
Annabelle held the pistol, balanced it in her hand.
Looks like you're holding it all right. Let me see what you can do with that rock there about 20 feet in front of you. That dark red one. See if you can knock a chip off of it.
Annabelle lifted her hand, and without pausing to sight along the barrel, she pulled the trigger. The bullet struck left of the target.
That's not bad. But if you hadn't pulled the trigger, you would have hit it dead center. Pulling the trigger pulled the gun off target.
Oh, now you're teasing me. How do you shoot the gun without pulling the trigger?
Like this.
The red rock now had a white chip in the dead center.
That's very impressive, Matt, but don't tell me you didn't pull the trigger.
I didn't. Look, wrap your hand around the butt of the pistol and put your finger on the trigger and I'll show you.
Annabelle held the pistol as Matt directed, then raised it in the direction of the rock. Matt wrapped his hand around hers.
Now, aim the pistol, but don't think of shooting it. We'll shoot it together.
Annabelle pointed the gun toward the rock and Matt slowly began to squeeze down on her hand.
You feel that?
Yes, I do.
Matt either didn't get the inference of her answer or paid no attention to it. Instead, he continued to slowly squeeze her hand.
Go!
Look where you hit.
Looking toward the rock, Annabelle saw a new white chip right next to the one that Matt had put there.
Oh, did I do that? Oh, no, you did it.
You were the one who aimed the pistol. All I did was help you squeeze off a shot. Now try it again without my help. Remember, just squeeze. That rock's getting a little used up. Try that one, the one that's sort of blue.
That one's too far away.
Try it.
All right.
Annabelle aimed and squeezed. The bullet hit the rock right in the middle.
Oh, that's wonderful!
Keep this up and you'll give Annie Oakley a run for her money.
In town at the Pig Palace, Lila walked over to the table where Carter and Fletcher were drinking whiskey.
What about it, boys? Would you like another visit like the one we had last week?
What do you mean?
Lila leaned over, put her hand down, and let it rest on Fletcher's crotch.
I mean, when I had the two of you at the same time. I've never had such a good time since I've been on the line. I think I proved I was woman enough for you two boys. Now, are you two men enough to do it again?
What are you going to charge us?
Same thing as I charged you last time, $5.
Wait a minute, you're the one that asked us. I think we ought to get more of a bargain this time.
What about $4?
$4?
Carter looked at Fletcher.
Yeah, let's go. Here's the $4.
Carter and Fletcher were holding two $1 bills each.
$4 ain't gonna do it, honey. It's gonna cost you $100.
$100? Are you crazy? Hell, the most expensive whore I ever had only cost me $10. You think we're gonna pay $100 just to go to bed with you?
That's not what you're paying for.
Lila walked over to a chest of drawers and opened the top drawer and pulled out two sheets of paper. She showed the papers to the two men.
What's this?
For me, it's $50 apiece from each of you. For you, it's your chance to stay out of jail.
What the hell? Where'd you get these?
It don't matter where I got them, honey. The point is, I got them. If you don't give me $100, I'll give these to Mr. Durbin. I'm sure he would be willing to pay me something for him. After all, he stands to make $3,000 out of it.
After the shooting lesson, Matt and Annabelle sat for a while on the bank of the Painted Rock Creek. The water was so clear in some places that it was easy to see the pebbles that lay on the bottom some 4 feet deep, while in other places, the stream broke into white froth where it tumbled over the large rocks.
Shady Rest wasn't always like this, you know. When I first came here, it was a nice community with good people. That's why I invested everything I had in building my dress shop.
What happened to the town?
Jacob Bramley is what happened to it. He bought the Pig Palace and turned it into a gathering place for the absolute scum of the earth. Then, gradually, all of First Street became a den of iniquity. For a while, it was tolerable because the trouble stayed on First Street, and it was almost as if we were two separate towns, Plantation Row and the rest of Shady Rest. But as you have seen, the evil is beginning to spill off Plantation Row and contaminate the rest of the town. Well, I have too much invested here in money, labor, and personal commitment to let Bramley and the others take it away from me. I don't intend to stand by and let that happen. I will fight them.
Annabelle, I know that you're disappointed that I refused to accept the position of city marshal. But just because I didn't accept the position doesn't mean that I have no interest in the conditions here. It's just as I said. As city marshal, I would have my hands tied by rules and regulations. I promise you that whoever the town selects as marshal will have my support.
Whoever the marshal is will need your support, especially since Bramley now has his own law with Deputy Sheriff Durbin.
An outlaw with a badge is still an outlaw.
Yes. That's my thought exactly.
Annabelle reached up to put her hand on Matt's cheek. Then she kissed him. When she pulled away from him, her face held an expression that was halfway between laughter and embarrassment.
I think we should get back to town now. It isn't good for business for me to keep my shop so long closed.
All right.
Matt stood first. He reached down to help Annabelle up. Annabelle held her pistol out to look at it.
Oh, now that I know how to shoot this, I'm going to have to get a holster.
Back in the Pig Palace, Carter and Fletcher were standing at the foot of the bed in Lila's room, looking down at the naked woman. Her head was turned to one side, and there were bruises on her neck.
I don't know. Maybe we shouldn't have done that.
What do you mean, maybe we shouldn't have done it? We didn't have no choice. She found out who we was. You seen that poster same as I did? She's gonna show him to Durbin if we didn't come up with $100. You got $50 left?
No, not since we give that money to Mutt, which we never did get back.
Yeah, well, I don't have $50 either, so it's like I said, we didn't have no choice.
Carter picked up the wanted flyers Lila had shown them.
I wonder where the hell she got these. I didn't even know there was any wanted flyers out on us. Hell, if we had known now, we could have changed our names just the way Mutt did. That way she wouldn't have known who we was. I mean, there ain't no description or nothing like that on them, just our names.
Well, what are we gonna do with her now?
We're gonna hide the body.
How? We can't just take her downstairs. Maybe you ain't never took no notice, but there ain't no back way out of here. Only way out's through the bar.
We aren't gonna take her out. We're gonna leave her here.
And do what? Hide her under the bed? She'll be discovered. Once they find her, they'll know we done it. I mean, there ain't no one in the bar that don't know we both come up with her. Hell, half the people in the bar seen us leave.
We'll put her there.
Hell, she can't fit in that trunk.
We'll make her fit.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll make her fit. That'll be a good place to hide her.
Come on, you're gonna have to help.
I tell you what, Bill, I don't like the way she's looking at us. I mean, look at her. Just give me the willies, I tell you.
She ain't looking at us. She ain't looking at nothing. She's dead.
Her eyes is open.
Carter opened the trunk, then lifted out several dresses, scarves, and shawls until the trunk was empty.
All right, let's get her in there.
The two men lifted her from the bed.
Oh, damn. I didn't have no idea she's this heavy.
It took some bending and twisting of legs and arms, but after a couple of tries, Carter and Fletcher managed to get her body stuffed down into the trunk. Once they had her in the trunk, they covered her up by putting the clothes and other articles back over her.
There. Now, even if someone happened to open the trunk, they won't see her unless they start emptying it.
More than likely, ain't nobody gonna do that till she starts to stinkin'.
Let's go have a drink.
What? Are you serious? Well, don't you think we maybe ought to get out of here?
Not yet.
Now we're going to go downstairs and ask the bartender where Lila is. After all, we gave her good money to go with us, but she never showed up.
What do you mean she never...
Oh, yeah. She never showed up. That's good. That's real good.
What do you mean, where is she? I thought I seen the three of you go up together.
Yeah, you did see us go up together, but when we got to the top of the stairs, she told us to go into her room and wait for a couple minutes while she went out to the privy. And that's what we done, only she didn't come back.
Maybe she come back when you two come back down here.
No, I don't think so. You can go up there and look for yourself if you want to. She ain't there.
I can't leave the bar. But Mr. Bramley is right over there. You can go talk to him.
Fletcher and Carter went over to a table where Bramley was playing a game of solitaire.
We got a bone to pick with you.
And what would that be?
Me and Fletcher here paid one of your whores to go to bed with us, but she took the money and never showed up.
Which means you owe us $5.
Why would I owe you anything? Did you give the money to the whore?
Yeah, we told you we did.
Then she's the one that owes you the $5.
All the whores here work for you, don't they?
Which whore are you talking about?
Lila. I don't know her last name.
You don't know her first name either. Whores never use their real names. Why don't you go on up to her room? More than likely, she's up there now waiting on you.
No, she ain't up there. She told us to wait in her room for her, which is what we done, but she never come.
We? What do you mean? Both of you were waiting on her?
Yeah.
At the same time?
Yeah, that's what we done once before, and she said she'd do it again.
Well, if anyone would do something like that, it would be Lila, I reckon. Are you sure you were in the right room?
Like I told you, we've been with her before, so we know which room was hers. Besides which, you can ask Poke if you want to. He's seen the three of us go up there together, so he could prove we was with her. She said she was going to use a privy and would be right back, only she didn't ever come back. We was in her room for sure. It's the second bedroom on the right at the top of the stairs. That's her room, ain't it?
Yes, that's her room. All right, come on. We'll go up and look together.
Well, it won't do no good. She ain't there.
Let's look anyway.
Fletcher and Carter followed Bramley up the stairs to Lila's room.
Lila? Lila, are you in there? I got a couple of men here complaining that you took their money, but didn't do anything for them. Lila? Open the damn door.
Door ain't locked. I know, because me and Carter was both just in here.
Bramley opened the door and the three men stepped inside. The room was empty and the bed made.
Damn. I wonder where she went.
Is that all you're going to say?
What do you mean?
Like we told you, we gave her $5 and we didn't get nothing for it. I mean, that doesn't look very good for your business, does it?
All right, come downstairs. I'll give you your money back. I can always get the money from Lila when she finally does show.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we was thinking, too.
2 days later, Jake Bramley was playing solitaire at his table in the back of the saloon when Barb and Monica came over to speak to him. Barb was the younger of the two girls, but only marginally better looking. Both of them, though, realized that they were near the end of their effective lives as prostitutes, the Pig Palace being practically the last stop for them.
Have you just come to watch me play old Sol? Or is there a purpose to the two of you standing there like a couple of moon-faced heifers?
Mr. Bramley, me and Barb are worried about Lila.
What about her?
Well, maybe you ain't noticed, but there ain't nobody seen her for 2-3 days. They ain't like her to just run off like that.
Have you checked down at Abby's? Maybe she's gone back to working there.
No, she ain't gone back there. I checked with some of the girls that work there. Besides which, you might remember, she and Abby had a big falling out, which is why she come here to work in the first place.
What about the Crooked Branch or Ace High? Have you checked with Foster or Gimlin?
No, sir, we ain't checked with them, but we've asked some of the other girls. I'm telling you, Mr. Bramley, there ain't nobody seen her in 2-3 days.
If that bitch ran off and took my clothes with her, I'm gonna have her ass.
Mr. Bramley, I don't think Lila would do that.
You don't, huh? All right, go up to her room. Go through her trunk and take out all her clothes. Even if the bitch does come back now, she doesn't work here anymore. You two can divide her clothes between you.
Oh, I want the red one!
While they went upstairs, Bramley continued his game of solitaire.
What's that smell? I don't know. It's come from over there.
What in the hell has gotten into them, Durbin?
You want me to go find out?
Even though Durbin wore the badge of a deputy sheriff, he still spent most of his time in the Pig Palace Saloon, declaring it to be the office of the deputy sheriff.
Yes, go find out.
When Durbin reached the second floor, he saw Barb and Monica standing in the hall, clinging to each other, their faces reflecting terror.
Mr. Bramley wants to know what the hell is wrong with you two.
Monica pointed toward the door.
She's in there.
Who's in there?
She is.
Durbin went into the room. He saw dresses, scarves, and other items scattered around, but nothing else. The lid of the trunk was up, but because the lid had been opened from the other side of the trunk, it blocked his view down inside. He walked around to the other side to look into the trunk, and that was when he saw Lila's nude body, her arms and legs twisted into a position that would allow her to fit into the confined space. Lila's skin was a clammy bluish-white, and her eyes were open and bulging almost out of their sockets. Durbin reached down into the trunk, lifted her body out, then lay it down on the bed. It was hard to pick her up and maneuver her because rigor mortis had set in, causing her arms and legs to remain in the contorted position in which Durbin found them. Leaving her twisted body on the bed, he went downstairs to inform Bramley.
That whore that's been missing? Well, she ain't missing no more. She's laying up there on her bed now, deader than hell.
Damn. I sort of figured something like that might have happened.
At that very moment, Carter and Fletcher, unaware that Lila's body had been discovered, were down at the Texas Star, the saloon that was most distant from the Pig Palace. They were sitting at a table separated from the others in the saloon by mutual choice. They didn't want to be with any of the other customers, and none of the other customers wanted to be with them. The women who worked at the Texas Star had learned the first time Carter and Fletcher ever came to the saloon that they were not good company. As a result, not one bar girl had come anywhere close to them for the whole time they'd been there.
You know what I'm thinking?
What?
I'm thinking maybe it's time we was getting on. If Jensen ever puts it together that we was with Mud, he's likely to come after us. And even if he don't, if that whore come by some wanted posters on us, like as not, Durbin will too. And I know that son of a bitch, he'd just as soon kill us as look at us. Especially if he thinks there's some reward money in it for him.
Yeah, and I'd just as soon not be here when they find that whore's body either.
I ain't worried about that. First of all, by now, I mean, what with us not running and all, I don't think it's likely they'll think we done it. Hell, horses are always getting killed. Besides which, I doubt Bramley or anyone else down here cares one way or the other. It's them reward posters I'm worried about.
Yeah, problem is, we ain't got practically no money left at all.
That's all right. I plan to do something about that before we leave.
You mean hold up the bank?
No. There's only two of us, and I don't know that just the two of us could hold up a bank. But if we was to rob some small business, say one that was out on the edge of town so that we could just ride off, it would be an easy way to get some money. Not much, but enough to get us out of here.
What business you got in mind?
Well, what about the grocery store? It's the last store in town, and there ain't likely to be anyone there that's wearing a gun, especially if we go in when there's no customers. And because it's right there on the edge of town, we can just grab whatever money is there in the store and hightail it out of here.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
15 minutes later, Fletcher and Carter entered the Rafferty's grocery store. 16-year-old Michael Rafferty, who was the son of the store owner, was sweeping the floor. Michael looked up and smiled.
Yes, sir. Something I can do for you?
You running this store by yourself, are you, boy?
I am right now. Pa's taking care of business downtown. But if you need to buy something, I can help you.
What if I give you a bill that's bigger than what the thing costs? Would you be able to give me change? I ain't gonna do no business with you if you can't give me change.
Oh, yes, sir. I can give you change. Pa give me the key to the cash box.
Well, that's good. We'll just do a little shopping then.
Michael walked around behind the counter.
What can I get for you?
A pound of flour, 2 pounds of bacon, a pound of coffee, and a couple pounds of beans ought to do it.
Within 2 minutes, all the supplies Carter asked for were packed up neatly into paper sacks.
That'll be $1.75, please.
Carter put a dollar on the counter.
I'll be wanting change for this.
Michael looked at it, then back at Carter.
You're fooling me.
No, I'm not.
Mister, you've only put $1 here. I'll be needing 75 more cents, or another dollar. Then I can get you some change.
I'll tell you what. I'll just be keeping this dollar. And I'll take everything else you have in the cash box.
What? Mister, are you robbing me?
What do you think, Lenny? This boy ain't as dumb as he looks. Open the cash box, boy, and give us all your money.
With shaking hands, Michael emptied the cash box of $36.55, then handed the money over to Carter.
This is it? This is all the money you have?
Yes, sir. Pa took the rest of the money to the bank. This here money is only just what he left me for making change.
Come on, Bill. It'll have to do. Let's get out of here.
Carter dropped the money down in the bag with the groceries.
Hey, Michael, can we go fishing? Or has your pa got you working?
Kelly, go get the marshal!
Michael took that opportunity to dash out the back door.
Where the hell did he go?
It don't matter. Let's go. We need to get out of here.
After Matt dropped off Annabelle and took the buckboard back to the livery, he walked into the Texas Star. Hawkins met him as soon as he stepped inside.
We had a robbery while you were gone, Matt.
What? Here?
No, it was Rafferty's grocery. All they got was $36, but they killed young Kelly Tucker. Kelly was a cowboy who worked out at the Croons Ranch. He and young Michael Rafferty were good friends. Kelly had come to invite Michael to go fishing. Michael said the robbers opened up on him as soon as he stepped in through the front door.
Do they know who did it?
From the description the Rafferty boy gave, it sounds like it might have been Bill Carter and Lenny Fletcher. Do those names mean anything to you?
I'm afraid not.
Well, they came into town about the same time that Mutt Crowley did. You most always saw the three of them together. Carter and Fletcher were in here this morning, but generally they hung out down on Plantation Row.
I'm sure our new deputy sheriff is hot on their trail.
I believe Durbin's words were that they were most likely out of the county by now. How the sheriff was ever convinced to give that buffoon a star, I'll never know. If he's a lawman, I'm a ballet dancer.
Back in Pecos, Pritchard was standing at the bar in the saloon and had just lifted the beer mug to his mouth when, in the mirror, he saw two familiar faces come into the saloon. He watched them in the mirror until they found a table. Then, carrying his beer with him, he walked over to them.
Hello, Pritchard.
The name is Connor. Deputy Sheriff Abe Connor.
I meant Connor.
What are you two boys doing here? Where's Mutt?
He's dead.
Dead?
Yeah.
Pritchard sat down at the table with the two men. Then he ran his hand through his hair.
What happened?
He was shot by a man named Matt Jensen. You know him?
Indeed, I do. I have never met him, but I certainly know who he is. He was the reason my brother was facing the hangman's noose up in Trinidad. Do you know any of the particulars?
Neither one of us seen it. But what we heard was that whenever Jensen seen Mutt, he recognized him and told the marshal about him. And then Mutt, he killed the marshal, and Jensen killed Mutt.
And where is Jensen now?
He's back in Shady Rest.
We tried to kill him. We took a shot at him, but we missed.
And you didn't make another try?
We couldn't stay around long enough. We killed us a whore. Then we killed some cowboy while we was robbing a grocery store. More than likely, nobody cares about the dead whore, but they're likely to get upset over the cowboy we killed.
So we thought we'd better come over here and find you. Being as you're a deputy sheriff, we figured we'd be safe over here.
Did you know there are reward posters out on the two of you?
Yeah, we seen them. The whore had them. I don't know where she got them.
So that's why we killed her.
And that's also why we robbed the store, because we was near about out of money, and we figured we needed some to come over here. All we need is a place to hide out for a while.
All right. I'll tell you what. There's an old abandoned cabin about a mile north of here. You two go hide out there until I come for you.
When'll that be?
I've got some money coming. Soon as I collect that, I'll come and get you.
Where will we be going, you think?
I don't think. I know. We're going to Shady Rest.
Shady Rest? Why the hell do we want to go out there? We just left there.
Because we're going to kill Matt Jensen.
Look, I don't know how much you know about Matt Jensen, but I'm not even sure the three of us could face him.
Tell me about Shady Rest. What kind of law do they have there?
They don't have no law at all.
No law?
No, not since Mutt killed the marshal. All he got is a deputy marshal, and from what I hear, he don't want to be the marshal.
Don't forget Durbin.
Who is Durbin?
Durbin is a deputy sheriff. He works for Jacob Bramley, which means the town don't have any law, because the law belongs to Bramley.
And who is Jacob Bramley?
Bramley sort of runs things on his side of town. You know, saloons, whores, that sort of thing. And the other saloon owners and that woman that runs the whorehouse, they all sort of listen to him.
They call that side of town Plantation Row.
Am I to understand that the town of Shady Rest is a town divided?
Yeah, you can say that. There's all the people over on Plantation Row, and then there are the good people.
How do the people on Plantation Row feel about Matt Jensen?
I don't know. I don't think they think about him one way or the other.
Then we shall have to change that.